Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 11th of November. First hour of our program today, we'll be talking about Guantanamo. The White House said yesterday that it's not easy to shut down the detention center. There are hopes because President-elect Obama has called this a sad chapter in American history. So there are hopes that he would move very quickly to dismantle Guantanamo, and word leaked out yesterday that his legal advisors were drafting plans to do just that. The ACLU has called upon the president-elect to ban torture and rendition as well as close down Guantanamo. It called on him to dissolve the military tribunals on his first day as president. The executive director of the ACLU, Anthony Romero, said there is no room for patience or delay in these areas. We have to hold President-elect Obama's feet to the fire. The first hour of our program today, we'll be talking about the action on what is now been acknowledged as a blot in America's image around the world. What will the president-elect do about Guantanamo? There are some reports that he has met with advisors to look at this and perhaps maybe proposing a new court system where some detainees would be returned to the countries where they were first captured for further detention or rehabilitation. The rest would be prosecuted in criminal courts. We'll look at this issue and have two guests with us the first hour of our program today. Scott Silliman is a law professor and executive director of the Center on Law, Ethics, and National Security at Duke University. And Marjorie Cohen will be joining us as well, professor of law at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and president of the National Lawyers Guild. That's coming up in just one moment. The second hour of our program today, we'll have a little bit of fun. Robert Mankoff joining us, the cartoon editor of The New Yorker. And there's a new book. I don't know if you go. It's one of the first things I go to in The New Yorker, but it's the New Yorker Cartoon Caption Contest, the winners, the losers, and everybody in between. Well, the new book is 100 of those winners, and some of them talk about what they went through to win. And we'll look at, and the book is filled with the cartoons as well. They're very funny. Robert is a cartoonist himself. More than 800 of his cartoons have been published in The New Yorker in the past 30 years, including, what an honor this is, the best-selling New Yorker cartoon of all time. So Robert will be joining us, hour number two of our program. Both hours, we welcome your phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655. We can also invite you to use the email, which is talk@wpr.org. And our guest is with us now, Professor Scott Silliman. Joined the Duke Law Faculty in 93 as a professor of the practice of law and executive director of the Law School Center on Law, Ethics, and National Security. Also holds appointments as an adjunct professor of law at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and at North Carolina Central University. Professor Silliman, thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Kathleen.
Is this something that he needs to do right off the bat, as people have suggested, deal with Guantanamo, close it?
I don't think he's going to be able to do that, Kathleen. He obviously doesn't have his national security team in place, and it's one thing to say you want to close Guantanamo Bay. It's quite another thing and a more difficult thing to determine what you're going to do with the 250-odd detainees that are still down there, and for whom many of them have been for 7 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Why hasn't something been done with those people in 7 years?
Well, we've got to distinguish, Kathleen, between those who will ultimately face some kind of a prosecution, a criminal trial. And my guess is that we're only talking perhaps 30 or 40 of them. The rest of the detainees have been picked up on the battlefield or around the world, and we don't know that they've committed a crime, but we believe that they are unlawful combatants, Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. They are being detained until the war is over. That's the Bush administration policy. So those folks will never see a criminal trial, but the question is, if their own countries won't take them back, and that's the case for many of them, what do you do with them?
Mm-hmm. And where are they from?
Well, they're from all different countries, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Syria, across a broad area. Some of the ones whose names have been in the news, Boumediene, they were originally Algerian, then living in Bosnia. So they come across the broad spectrum of many, many countries.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about their own countries not taking them back. Why wouldn't they take them back? And is that a likelihood they wouldn't take them back?
Well, in some cases, Kathleen, the United States, the State Department, has gone to them and said, we want you to go ahead and take back your particular citizen. But on the other hand, in taking them back, we'd like some assurance that you're going to keep them under restraint, that you're going to keep them under surveillance. And I believe the response of those countries has been, you've never charged them with a crime. Then how do you expect us to keep them in some kind of detention where we have no evidence of crime either? So it's been a very difficult diplomatic discussion that's been had. Now, having said that, I think with the president-elect coming into office and the way he has been received in the international community, my guess is that the Obama administration would renew diplomatic negotiations with many of these countries and may have more success than the Bush administration has had.
Mm-hmm. Why did all of this, in word that his legal advisors may be looking at new plans, surface yesterday?
Well, it's difficult to determine, Kathleen. It may have been a trial balloon. Clearly, I don't believe that his advisors or anyone on the transition team have really had the time to sit down with those in the Bush administration who have been responsible for detainee operations. I think a lot of this is tied in with very highly classified intelligence information. I find it hard to believe that they have had all that information and come up with some kind of a firm plan to present to President-elect Obama. My guess is that when you're talking about the closure of Guantanamo Bay and actually replacing the detainees in some other country or perhaps in the United States, that will take several months and perhaps even up to a year to accomplish. Even Obama has said that he wants to close Guantanamo Bay, but do it as soon as prudently possible, and I think that's a key word.
There has been some talk about creating some kind of new court system to handle those who will face trial. What is that system?
Well, it's the concept of a national security court, Kathleen. And the thought is that if we try to bring Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Ramzi bin al-Shib and those who have been waterboarded, but who are nonetheless alleged to be complicit in the attacks of 9/11, into our regular federal criminal courts, that they will not be able to be prosecuted. The evidence will not be able to be used against him. So many have advocated that we use a congressionally created national security court where the rules of evidence are more relaxed, there is less due process, and therefore they could be prosecuted. I'm not really sanguine about that. I think that sends the wrong message. And further, it would require an act of Congress to do it, and I'm not sure you've got the political will in Congress to create that type of a court. I think if you're dealing with those who are going to face a criminal trial and you're not going to use military commissions, the better option, as I see it, is the use of courts-martial, which is the same system of military justice that we use for our own servicemen and servicewomen. Matter of fact, the United States Supreme Court 2 years ago actually held that up as meeting the international standard for fair trial. So I would favor the use of courts-martial. They could be held anywhere in the world. They have rules of evidence that could accommodate the trial of these detainees, and I think they would work well.
And do you have any idea, do any of us have any idea of how many of the detainees would be facing some kind of courts-martial, and how many probably don't have any substantive charges against them and would be released?
Well, the prosecution arm of the Military Commission Office, Kathleen, has said up to 80 would face criminal trial. I think that's a high figure. My own sense is that we will see no more than 30 or so trials in any form, whether it be federal criminal courts, courts-martial, or whatever. Again, it's one thing to say that you're holding someone because they're an unlawful enemy combatant, and according to the Bush administration, that you can hold them until the end of the war on terror. It's another thing to say there is evidence of a crime that was committed, killing an innocent civilian, a crime against the law of war that can actually result in a criminal trial. So of the 250, I would say probably less than 20% will ever face a criminal trial, and the rest will either have to be released, or if they are so dangerous that no country will take them, then we're going to have to find a place to house them somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I was reading yesterday that some of the detainees, and I guess there are more than 90 from what I've read from Yemen, that there have been negotiations with that country, with the United States, but they haven't been able to reach a deal on some kind of prisoner release. Are other countries having negotiations and have had negotiations with the U.S. on this?
Oh, yes. I think those negotiations go back a couple of years. The State Department has been working for a long time to try to take some of those out of Guantanamo Bay, whose intelligence value has been exhausted and who are no longer considered to be major security threats, and move them back to their countries. But as I said earlier, I think part of our request, Kathleen, has been to say, take them back in your country, but somehow keep an eye on them. Mm-hmm. We don't want them returning to the battlefield in Afghanistan or Iraq or waging war or making threats against the United States. And those countries have been a bit reluctant to commit to that type of restriction. But the Obama administration, I think, will probably have more success and maybe not be so stringent in what we're requiring of that other country, so we may be able to move more people in the next 6 to 8 months.
It's just unfathomable to me that you would have that many people detained under this unlawful combatant designation for all of these years and not move them through the process. It just... That's a long time. 7 years is a long time to not be able to figure out what to do with these people.
Well, again, Kathleen, as far as those for which there is evidence to bring a criminal trial, the military commission system that President Bush first created way back in November of 2001, 7 years ago, mm-hmm. has had its speed bumps. There have only actually been two trials under the new system, Salim Hamdan and one 2 weeks ago, Bahlul. Only one more is scheduled for the second week of January. So that has been a difficult system to move for a lot of reasons. Prosecutors have resigned because they felt it was politicized and not fair. It's obvious that that system will not be continued in its current state. But for those 30 or 40 who will face a criminal trial, you've got to find some kind of a forum where you can prosecute them. Again, whether it be in the American criminal courts and the federal courts of this country, a court-martial system, or, as some have suggested, have Congress create a special criminal court for dealing with them. But as to the remaining 80%, the 200 detainees down there, the president has been detaining them supposedly under his power as commander-in-chief of the armed forces and arguing that the congressional resolution, the authorization for the use of military force, allows him to detain them at Guantanamo Bay for as long as the war on terrorism goes on. And the problem is nobody knows when it will end. That has been what has been drawing so much international criticism, and that's the more difficult issue to solve.
Right. The Guardian yesterday said that that this Guantanamo issue and the detainees being there is almost universally acknowledged as the biggest blot on America's image. Is that going too far, or would you agree with that?
No, I would say Guantanamo Bay, in conjunction with the photos coming out of Abu Ghraib, and the perception, if not the reality, of the Bush administration that we can do anything we want to anywhere in the world. We can breach the sovereignty of another country. For instance, as your listeners may have read about yesterday with this secret executive order or execute order that allows for us to go into other countries on the approval of the President of the United States. That sort of unilateral force, use of force, has, I think, generated tremendous international criticism and set our credibility back for at least a decade. So it's just not Guantanamo Bay. It's the entire Bush administration plan for how we deal with the war on terrorism. But the fact that we have kept citizens of other countries without any kind of due process until the Supreme Court ruled this summer has been a major point of irritation between the United States and most of our, even our allies in the international community.
What should the new president do about Guantanamo? What can the new president do, and how quickly should he act, and how quickly can he act? The discussion of this hour, our guest, Professor Scott Silliman, who's a law professor and executive director of the Center on Law, Ethics, and National Security at Duke University. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, it's talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, we'll be talking about the New Yorker cartoon caption contest, the winners, the losers, and everybody in between. Bob Mankoff joining us, who is cartoon editor of The New Yorker. Let's go to phone calls now, 800-486-8655. We start with Betsy from Madison. Hi, Betsy.
It's Esty.
Oh, Esty. Hi, Esty.
Yeah. Hi. I think that it was floated so early, right away yesterday, because Obama just wanted to signify right away both to the citizens of this country and to the world as a whole that he's going to take a significant departure from the evils of the Bush regime, which have really affected the entire world. Where in the name of freedom and democracy, what you get is actually torture, endless incarceration, extraordinary rendition, really an extraordinary program of spying on citizens and others. So I think what he's doing is telling the whole world that these things are going to end, and a new era is starting. And I agree with the person you quoted at the beginning of the hour that we have to hold his feet to the fire and make sure that he does that and then continues dismantling the other really evils of these 8 years. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, SD. Professor Silliman.
No, I don't disagree. I think she makes a very good point. And I think Barack Obama, even throughout his campaign, has signaled that he will take a radically different position with regard to dealing with the international community. And I think that's the largest part of the change that will take place. The Bush administration has basically taken unilateral positions. It said the United States can do whatever it wants to, and we really don't need the support of the international community. We have not gone to the United Nations Security Council for help. I think Obama will definitely change that. I think that will help as far as solving some of these problems with regard to Guantanamo Bay. I think it will definitely help as far as having the international community be more willing to assist the United States in Iraq and Afghanistan. So he needs to signal that. But again, having said that and promised that he will carry through on it, that does not mean everything's going to happen on the 21st of January, because these are very difficult problems to solve.
Who would you like to see? I don't want to put you on the spot, but will the Secretary of State position be a crucial one for him to fill?
I think it will, and also the Secretary of Defense. There's some commentary that perhaps President Obama would want to carry over Secretary of Defense Bob Gates for maybe a certain period, for up to a year, for continuity. But I think Secretary of State is a key one. Some people are saying, well, would he ask Colin Powell to go back into that position? Colin Powell, probably one of the most respected Secretaries of State with regard to the international community that we've had, and that's a possibility. But he's being obviously very close on this. I don't think he's disclosing any cabinet appointments and probably won't do so for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Mike from Madison. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Thanks very much. Great guest. As a lawyer, you know, I look at what this administration does, and it's clear they simply have contempt for the rule of law generally. But my question specifically is, if you went to a military tribunal, military court-martials, what would be the difference in the evidentiary standards? I'm assuming they wouldn't allow waterboarded evidence or just rank hearsay. And in most cases, I don't know that there's a lot else there.
Mike, the change would be in a court-martial system, you would have no evidence that was procured through any type of coercion that would be admissible, just like in the federal trials. The rule on hearsay is basically prohibited unless it fits within one of the very narrow exceptions. So a court-martial process with regard to rules of procedure and evidence, very, very similar to a trial in the federal courts, except you've got the trial participants, the trial counsel, the prosecutor and the defense lawyer and the judge actually in uniform, part of the armed forces. The benefit of a court-martial is it can be conducted anywhere in the world. And further, it has provisions to deal with classified information. It is able to get witnesses, military witnesses, to a trial if that is needed, because, again, it's a very portable system. So it's one that I favor as against trying to bring everyone into the United States for a trial in the criminal courts, which I think will be very, very difficult in some of these cases, like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Ramzi bin al-Sheikh.
Can Kathleen, if I might real quickly.
Sure.
The military officers have been appointed to defend these guys are really unsung heroes. A lot of these guys have put their careers on the line and really, I think, acted in the best traditions of our legal system.
No, I applaud you for saying that, Mike. I spent 25 years as an Air Force lawyer, and I know many of the lawyers who are involved in the defense of these people. I know some who are on the prosecution side who have taken heroic stands as well. I think that's the one good part of the entire military commission system. It is the professionalism and the dedication of those in the military to represent either the government or the detainees to the very best of their ability, and I think that's something of which I have a great deal of pride.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
We go next to Ann from La Crosse. Hi, Ann.
Hello.
Hi, Ann. Could you turn your radio down, please?
Yes,
I haven't said that in a long time. Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Ann.
Yes, thank you. I applaud the lawyer here to try to remedy the situation. As a citizen of this country, quite frankly, I'm shameful and disgraced that we conduct such detaining of individuals. If one individual in this country under the umbrella of the United States, whether it's foreign enemy, is detained, all of us have our freedoms detained, which also extends this disgraceful conduct to the other countries who come to the point of hating this country, so that that helicopter that was brought down overseas, they literally dragged these men, our citizens, who were defending our country through the streets to the by ropes. They're trying to redo to our citizens what we're doing to their people. Could you comment on that?
Well, and there's no question that over the last 7 years, the Bush administration, in characterizing the attacks as acts of war and using the instruments of war, including detention without charges, to further our fight against al-Qaeda and the Taliban and other terrorists, has generated tremendous criticism throughout the world. And I agree with you on that. I also would suggest, going back to something that Kathleen and I were talking about, that when you're dealing with folks at Guantanamo Bay who have been detained for up to 7 years without any charges, some of whom might have been swept up and they were innocent, if they were not terrorists when they came in, we have probably allowed them to become terrorists, certainly when we released them. So that's a danger. But the interesting thing is going to be, with the Obama administration, will it turn away from this paradigm of war and join with the European view that we are really dealing with criminal acts of terrorism and deal with it as a crime rather than an act of war? That will be something for all of us to watch, because when you deal with it as a criminal act, then there is inherently more due process involved, legal rules attached, and you move away from this very unlimited power of the President of the United States as Commander-in-Chief to wage the war as he deems fit. So it's going to be interesting to see, again, and why I think it's going to take a time for all this to be sorted out, to see exactly how President Obama determines how the war on terrorism should be fought, as dealing with it from a law enforcement point of view or dealing with it from a paradigm of war where the military is his primary tool.
Let's talk, thanks very much for your call. Professor Silliman, just a moment about what court would best be able, and we've talked about this a little bit, the evidence that may be gathered through military interrogation that might have to be thrown out or from intelligence sources. What court could best handle the problem areas here, the defendants who might have a right to confront witnesses, which could mean undercover CIA officers, or as some press reports have said, terrorist turncoats might have to take the stand, and that would jeopardize their cover and would also reveal classified intelligence. How does that get worked into decisions that are made about what to do with these people?
Well, again, Kathleen, I think you've only got a couple of options with regard to a prosecution. It's either going to be a trial in the federal courts in the United States, and whenever you bring them into the United States, these detainees, for trial, they're going to accrue more constitutional protection than they even have now. Why I favor a court-martial system, and I was misquoted in The Guardian on this, I favor a court-martial system rather than any other kind of specialized court that Congress might create,
mm-hmm.
simply because it's already existing. It has 55 years of experience. It has international recognition. Our United States Supreme Court has said it's a fair system and one that should be used. And you're dealing with very professional military personnel who would prosecute and defend and be judges who are well-versed in military law and the prosecution of this type of case. So I think it could be easily done. Congress, all it would have to do would be to amend no more than two or three articles of the Uniform Code of Military Justice to make it work. And I think that would be the better way to go. If you bring it into the federal courts of the United States, we will have more trials like Zacharias Moussaoui that will go on for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think, although they could be used, they are the best form.
Has anybody asked you what we ought to do?
It's difficult for me to answer that. I have made my views known, but it's not been any kind of a formal reach out.
Okay. Let's go to Susie next from Green Bay. Hi, Susie.
Good morning. My question is this. I understand the mentality and the noble effort of the Bush administration during the last 7 years to keep people in this country safe. So as the terrible losses of 9/11 were not repeated, and I wish an appreciation for that would be mentioned at the times when our way forward is being discussed, because we have not had a successful attack on our soil for the last 7 years, and I think that's a feather in the cap of the Bush administration, in all fairness. My question to you is, when the modus operandi of choice is suicide attacks, what is the hope of bringing justice in the criminal system to the perpetrators following yet another loss of American life? And I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Susie.
Obviously, I think you're talking about the trial of any terrorists, even though they be jihadists who seek martyrdom. There is the deterrent principle of the criminal law, and that's what we're talking about. You need to punish, but you also need to deter. As far as how are you going to stop terrorist attacks, you may never stop them. But somewhere along the line, we have got to draw the balance between ensuring national security and deterring further threats of attack with some kind of legal protection, due process. The history of this country is built on those principles. So I would hope that we would never go so far in our fighting of the war against terrorism to prevent further attacks to lose in the process what it is that is the fabric of being an American citizen. That's the balance that has to be struck. Very difficult to do it, and one that takes time.
Let's go to Jim from Milwaukee next. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I called in mid-program, so I hope that I don't stray too much. A couple of things. I'm optimistic about, on one hand, because of the attitude of Obama, but I'm pessimistic because of the distance that he has to go. And in international affairs, I would just cite Jim Marrs, M-A-R-R-S, his book, Terror Conspiracy, and it has, I think, some powerful analogies between some of the things that happened in the Reichstag fire and some of the things that the Bush did, and how far our civil liberties have deteriorated out of this. And nationally, I was just looking at the AIG thing that's in the news, and it strikes me that it's not the golden rule that they're following. It's the rule that the person that has the gold makes the rules. And, you know, always before Christmas, we hear these sad stories about people in poor neighborhoods who have their Christmas gifts looted from under their tree. But it strikes me that the deregulation and the war spending that have already gone on are going to make a lot worse Christmases for a lot of Americans in the future. And so the question is, you know, how much can, whether it be in international or national issues, how far can Obama go to clean up the mess that has been created?
Well, Tim, obviously, I think from what we're hearing from the president-elect, from his transition team, his goal is to move us towards a better balance between national security and civil liberties. I think we're also hearing that he wants to bring us more back into the international community. And when you're talking about the credit crisis and the financial markets, I think it is a global connection. We are interconnected with all the markets throughout the world. So what we've got to do is come back to the international community and recognize that in many respects we need their help. And I think that's what he is saying. But on the other hand, as you mentioned, I think it's going to take a while. I think we should not expect everything to be fixed on the first day of the Obama administration. Many of these are knotty problems. He has got to get a lot of good advice. He's got to have the right people in key cabinet appointments who will be his team to work some of these issues. And the question is, where is his priority going to be? I suspect that his priority will be the economy before it is Guantanamo Bay. But as I talk to the media in Europe, they are wanting Guantanamo Bay closed on the 21st of January. And much as I would like that to happen, I think that's unrealistic.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to John from Rhinelander. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I do appreciate the need for the infusion of, let's say, more of the criminal justice system and treating some of the people that you don't want to just hold without, and as far as the Guantanamo thing. But I think that some of the comments that have been made, it's so easy to consistently say, you know, refer to how badly we're seen in the world and forget how much the world looks to us as the single remaining superpower. I'd agree more with one of the previous callers that, you know, while we always have to temper our efforts and our goals and make sure that they're, you know, on the side of right, we don't go to conquer other countries. And I think it's extremely naive to refer to things like terrorists being actually deterred by rule of law. That's certainly not something they're going to respect. And even more so, as far as our efforts in other countries, if we have to look to the international community for help, that's one thing that we can try to do from a diplomatic standpoint. But to go to the United Nations, which is clearly one of the most ineffective forces as far as decision-making in international affairs, as far as conflict, I think that that has been a terrible mistake. It's one of my biggest fears about Obama. For example, when Russia invaded Georgia, one of his second approach to it after his first approach was to suggest that we go to the Security Council and have them take action, because he didn't seem to even understand Russia has a veto vote, and that single veto vote concept alone makes them an incredibly ineffective organization. We do have to stand and make some decisions as the remaining power in the world, and not just for conflict, but for good.
Yeah, John, I respect your opinion in this regard. I would only suggest that I think when we are talking about the use of military force throughout the world and international relations, we are stretched so thin right now. We've got soldiers going on their third and fourth deployments, either into Iraq or Afghanistan, that it is very difficult for us to do military operations. For instance, had we wanted to go in to Georgia, very difficult for us to do that right now because we're not able and have the enough soldiers and sailors, Marines and airmen to really respond as much as we need to. So I would only suggest that we do need to have more international cooperation with regard to military force and other operations. I think we are globally connected, and whether you think the Security Council of the United Nations is productive or unproductive, I think we can no longer say that we're going to do it all by ourselves and maintain this war paradigm, which has fueled more jihadists throughout the world. So I think, again, it's going to be interesting to see how Obama reacts as far as moving away from the war paradigm more towards the criminal law paradigm, because that's what generally the rest of the world is using in trying to deal with terrorism.
Mm. I was listening to an interview this morning, and I don't know who it was. I was in the car, but somebody was talking about, I haven't heard this before, this new administration is going to be facing the most difficult time in American history since Abraham Lincoln. I thought, ooh, that's quite a statement to make. Do you think that's true?
I'm not sure that that's true, Kathleen. I think that may overstate it. But clearly, there's going to be no time for relaxation for this administration. When you look at the economic problems they're going to have to deal with, and how far do you go in nationalizing industry like the auto industry? That's the question on the table right now. You've got a huge issue in dealing with Guantanamo Bay and other parts of our global strategy in trying to bring it back to a more stable type of paradigm. This is going to be a huge problem for this new administration. And I think Obama has already alerted us to the fact that no matter how much we want everything solved in the first days, weeks, and months, that some of these things may not be attainable for a year or even for 4 years of the term. So we have got to set our priorities, what is important, and then go about it methodically with good decision-making and support Obama as best we can to get these things done.
It is remarkable he never even had a chance to sleep in, isn't it?
Well, I think his view, too, also is, as I understand, that he does not want to start too early. He has said many occasions the United States has one president, mm-hmm. and until the 20th of January, that's George Bush. But that also means that there needs to be very careful transition work between his staff, his new leadership team, and the current team, to make sure that we do not have a hiatus, that on the first day, that things start to be worked. But yes, there are going to be bumps in the road. There are going to be things that might not work. There may be international negotiations with regard to the detainees that don't go as quickly as we want. These are very, very difficult problems, and we just have to, however we think of this administration, we need to be patient.
Yeah. One more phone call for you, and it is, and Rhonda reminds me, the person I heard was Paul Light from NYU, and we're trying to get him on a show, too. Rich from Sauk City. Hi, Rich.
Hi. I just wanted to throw out a comment. Do you see any possibility of the Obama actually holding George Bush accountable for some of the actions he's taken in this war, you know, possibly, you know, an investigation or possibly even a trial for war crimes for George Bush?
Yeah, that's a question that has been asked, and I personally do not see it. Again, it becomes very, very complicated, Rich, because you've got the Department of Justice rendering an awful lot of legal memoranda, called the torture memos in some cases, that basically have said that the President of the United States can do what he's doing. So for a new administration to come back in and try to have a criminal accountability, when in theory Congress could have brought impeachment proceedings while he was in office, I think is highly unlikely. That does not mean that the new administration coming in January will not move away from and clearly shift to a new tack, but I think to expect there to be some kind of criminal trials going back for the president or the vice president, I think that would be highly unlikely, and I'm not sure that would be the right political move to make.
Professor Silliman, thank you so much for being with us. You're a great guest.
It's my pleasure, Kathleen.
Our guest, Professor Scott Silliman, professor of law and executive director of the Center on Law, Ethics, and National Security at Duke University. He also teaches at the law school at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and North Carolina Central University, and had a long career as a military attorney. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We do want to tell you that tomorrow during this time period, we're going to talk with someone from Foreign Policy Magazine. They asked 10 of the world's top thinkers to name the unlikely team that could best guide Barack Obama through the years ahead. We'll talk about the dream team tomorrow during this time period. Continuing on what to do with the detainees at Guantanamo and when it should be closed in just a moment, another perspective from another guest. I'm Kathleen Dunn. And you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Marjorie Cohn joins us now, professor of law at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and president of the National Lawyers Guild. Our lines are open now, so if you'd like to continue on the same line of questioning, just a different guest, 800-486-8655 is our number. Hello, Professor Cohn. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Kathleen.
So the question came up the last 45 minutes. Could President Obama close Guantanamo on January 21st of 2009?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He has the power to do that. Bush actually is the one who established the prison camp at Guantanamo, and Obama can certainly close it down.
Would it create some problems? Some have said that, the Bush administration has said yesterday, as you know, that it's not that easy to do. You have to figure out what kinds of court system some of the people need to go to, how you figure out where they're going home, and if the home will let them come in, et cetera. It's fairly complicated.
So, well, he could order it closed on the 21st, but you're right. I mean, you can't close it unless, I mean, you have to process people out. And he... Most of the people there have no connection with terrorism at all, and the Bush administration has said, "Well, we would release many of them, but we can't find a place to send them." If there is probable cause to believe that they've committed a crime, then they should be taken to the United States and tried in U.S. courts under our system of due process. If there is no probable cause to believe they've committed a crime, they should be released. And if they cannot be released back to their own country because there might be danger for them, then they should be released in the United States. If they're not a danger, then they should be released. Now, Obama, some rumors have been coming out of the Obama campaign that he intends to do that, but that there is another classification of people whom he wouldn't try for crimes but who might be connected to terrorism, that he would set up special national security courts and to protect the classified information. That's a very, very bad idea, and he should be discouraged from doing that. There are plenty of protections in the federal court system in this country, in the United States, that allow for the protection of classified information. So it's not necessary to set up another layer of courts, which is what Bush tried to do, and Bush ended up setting up two different layers of courts aside from our own federal court system, and Bush's military commissions and his combatant status review tribunals have turned out to be kangaroo courts.
I'm a little confused here, Professor Cohen. If we have said that these people are unlawful combatants, have we even gone through a process to find there's probable cause that they have committed a crime, or don't we have a clue?
Well, there are two different things in the way it's set up now. There are two different types of tribunals at Guantanamo. One is called the military commissions. They're set up to try people for crimes and to punish them and even give them the death penalty. The other set of tribunals is called the Combatant Status Review Tribunals, and they're set up to declare whether somebody's an enemy combatant or not. And they are the ones that the Supreme Court was reviewing when the Supreme Court said that Bush could, the Military Commissions Act, which was pushed through Congress by Bush, could not strip the Guantanamo detainees of habeas corpus. That was unconstitutional because people at Guantanamo have a right to have a neutral judge say, look, you're being unlawfully held, you should be released. Now, the Combatant Status Review Tribunals, the reason I say they're kangaroo courts is that there's no right to a lawyer. There's a right to a personal representative, and the personal representative can actually, there's no right of confidentiality, so anything the detainee tells him can be told to the government, and in fact, some of these personal representatives even argue for the on behalf of the government. The detainee is not allowed to see all the evidence against him. He's not even allowed to be present at all stages of the procedure, and so it's really, and people who have military people who have participated in these combatant status review tribunals have said that they're a joke. And then if the combatant status review tribunal finds that you're not an enemy combatant, which I think they did in about three cases, the U.S. military says go back and do it again until you find that they are enemy combatants. And once somebody's an enemy combatant, the only appeal they have of that decision is an appeal of whether or is to a federal court in the District of Columbia. But the only issue that court can consider is whether or not the Combatant Status Review Tribunal followed its own procedures, and its own procedures are faulty. And therefore, that's why the Supreme Court said that review procedure is not an adequate substitute for habeas corpus, where somebody goes before a neutral judge and says, look, I'm being unlawfully held, cut me loose.
Mm-hmm. What signal does it send in? Do you have an idea of what countries in the world who have been appalled by what's gone on at Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib, et cetera, do they have some say-so? Are they in communication, do you think, with the Obama transition team now to put their two cents in about this whole issue? Because it's been of great concern to them.
Well, I don't know what communication other countries have had with the Obama campaign, but I know that a lot of people, a lot of organizations have been speaking out, and people have been speaking out about closing Guantanamo. The National Lawyers Guild, my organization, called for the closure of Guantanamo several years ago, and we've issued several statements about Guantanamo. So it's, and I think that because of the, not only because of the inhumane things that are going on there, and the lack of due process, but also because Guantanamo has become the symbol of American hypocrisy in the area of human rights, where the U.S. government will look at other countries and criticize them for human rights, and yet there's this horrific thing going on at Guantanamo, where they're being kept, many of them for many years, men and boys, like animals in small cages, with it, and they've been tortured, they've been on a hunger strike, many of them, they've been force-fed, which the U.N. says amounts to torture. They stick a tube down their throat. It's extremely painful. They don't sterilize it. They don't use any anesthesia. And there are other reports of torture and inhumane treatment, and plus the fact that they're being held there with no charges, most of them, and no real review of their detention. Most of them were picked up by warlords and sold as bounty to the U.S. military for $5,000 or some such sum, and then sent to Guantanamo, and they've been there ever since. And many have been released, but many have not. So I think that it, because it's a symbol of U.S. hypocrisy and because of the inhumane things going on there, Obama is likely to order it closed as soon as he comes into office and then go about setting up the procedures to close it down.
Let's take some phone calls for you. Rich from New Buffalo. Hi.
And finally, after 45 minutes, we hear that many have been released. I'd be interested in that. How many prisoners were there at its peak?
There have been more than 750 prisoners there at one time or another, and yes, some have been released. Some, after spending 4 or 5 years in these cages, have been released. And you wonder, if they were innocent, and if they were released, why couldn't they have been released right away? why did they have to be locked up like animals?
Right. 7 years is a long time. It's
indeed
a long time. Yeah. Thanks for the call. Matt from Osseo. Hi.
Hello?
Yes, Matt, go ahead.
Yes, I'm just, I haven't heard it come up in the discussion yet this morning. What about the International War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague? Why couldn't that be used for a trial means for these guys down there?
I think you're probably talking about the International Criminal Court.
Mm-hmm.
And the International Criminal Court is set up to try people for genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity on a very large scale. These men at Guantanamo have not committed these atrocities. In fact, it's not clear that they have really committed any crimes at all. And there's, for example, there's one there's a boy there called Omar Khadr. He's a Canadian. He was picked up when he was 15 years old. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, and he's accused of murdering an American soldier with a hand grenade when Omar Khadr's family was attacked by U.S. soldiers. They were in a building, and everybody was killed but Omar Khadr, evidently. But somebody threw a grenade and killed a U.S. soldier, and he is on trial in the military commission for that. But it turns out that the government didn't turn over evidence showing that somebody else threw the hand grenade. It's not clear that these people have really committed any crimes at all. And in fact, most of them have. There's been no proof of any connection between them and Al Qaeda or the Taliban. So I think that, you know, yes, people have been released, but after being held unlawfully for many, many, many years.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Paul from La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. Yes, I read some of this in the Way of the World, Ron Susskind's book, and it is sick that my government did this. But for the transition team, one of the legal advisors is Lawrence Tribe. So why would he go? I thought he was on your side on this issue, and I couldn't understand why he would be advising the new Obama administration, to set up a special court for security purposes.
I'm sorry, there was a click, and I missed the name of the person that you mentioned.
Lawrence Tribe.
Lawrence Tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Obama's getting advice from many different people, and Lawrence Tribe evidently thinks there should be a separate court system. I think that's a very bad idea, and many other people do as well. I think the ACLU just came out with a statement on this. Lawrence Tribe is not right on everything. I mean, he is advising Obama, but again, Obama is getting advice from many different kinds of people, and hopefully he will use his own judgment. I'm sure he will, actually, and come to the right decision on this.
1 minute left and one more phone call. Stephanie from Madison, hi.
Here's my question. I have a question about the whole concept of enemy combatant. Isn't that a concept, a status created by the Bush administration? Is it not a legally recognized status throughout the world? And could the Obama administration just simply get rid of that status?
Okay. Thanks,
yes,
Stephanie.
Good point. No, it is not recognized throughout the world, and and yes, they could get rid of it. The Geneva Conventions control, and we are party to the Geneva Conventions, which means that it's part of U.S. law. And somebody is a prisoner of war if they satisfy certain criteria, but there needs to be a hearing to determine whether they're prisoners of war. And there has not been those hearings because the Bush administration has decided that they don't want to hold those hearings. But under the Fourth Geneva Convention, all prisoners have to be protected. Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions, nobody can be sentenced or executed without going through all of the due process that civilized countries go through. So, Obama certainly could say, no, we're going to abandon that category. I don't know that he will.
Professor Cohn, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Professor Marjorie Cohn, Professor of Law at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, President of the National Lawyers Guild, and author of Cowboy Republic, Six Ways the Bush Gang Has Defied the Law. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this interesting hour, and to you for all of your calls. Rhonda as well did on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we should have quite a few chuckles the second. It's time for chuckles. So we're going to have some fun the second hour of our program as we talk about cartooning. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.